Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 5th of March, 2021. A very busy day yesterday, a lot to go through. All of it clearly triggered by a appearance by Powell at a Wall Street Journal hosted event in which the market was clearly expecting something from the Fed, some sort of wording or sense of reassurance that the Fed was on the hunt in terms of having this rise in yields on its radar screen and saying something about it. It wouldn't have taken much for Powell to indicate a bit more concern levels, but he did not. And I think it was a particularly prescient piece written by our Stein Jakobsen yesterday on why it's too early for the Fed to even consider yield curve control and other measures for the long end of the yield curve in the US. Certainly worth a read, but it was very much worth a read before the event because it predicted effectively that this is what would happen, that there wouldn't be much for him to say. And he did say very little. He just merely said it was a notable move recently in yields and that it caught his attention, but that he's monitoring a broad menu of financial conditions. And that really is key, that broad menu of financial conditions. So if we go back to the late 2018 experience, we saw, for example, the market selling off very heavily. I think it even managed a full bear market status of 20% correction in the S&P versus what we've seen so far is merely 6%. And that's including yesterday's losses. And as well, we saw some considerable widening in credit spreads before the big reverse that happened in early 2019. So in any case, too much of a too long of an intro here. I want to get over to you in a second, Peter, but just want to point out on slide two in our slide deck today, you can see how the action shaped up. You can see that the 10-year benchmark and basically every treasury yield from 7 years out to the longest end of the curve closed at a new high close level for the cycle, above that big 1.5% level for the 10-year. And then that little intraday chart on the lower right there, you can see how this has all unfolded, the selling in treasuries over the Powell appearance there at that event. And then briefly on the technicals before I pass the baton to you, Peter, on slide three, just noting some really key technical levels coming into view and that 12,750 level, obviously a key pivotal level. That was the 38.2% retracement area on the way down where the price action finally broke down a couple of days ago. We've sliced through the 100-day moving average. The next Fibonacci level is this 12,070 level ish, and then below that, I think we're probably looking at the 200-day moving average, which is on the cash index is 11,657. Peter, take it away. I know we've been banging on about this, why the selling is so concentrated and more sensitive to the interest rates and in these riskier stocks. So take us through that and what your thoughts are after yesterday's session.
Yeah, so it's yeah, we had the discussion on the internal call this morning that the S&P 500 is holding up pretty well, and I think that's the key measure that the Fed is looking at when gauging the equity market. So the downside action is in the Nasdaq index, and even more so in the what I call tier two and tier three technology segments. So actually, the segments just below the Nasdaq 100. I think the Nasdaq 100 is just the beacon because of its liquidity in the futures market. But beneath that, that's really where the carnage is moving, and you can actually see that here on slide four, where you can see the sort of the red color popping up everywhere in our small table here of the themes that we're tracking. And I mean, yesterday was just a bloodbath. I mean, we had bubble stocks down 5%, all the other very strong momentum segments like e-commerce and biotechnology, gaming stocks, green transformation were down pretty heavily. And I think if we sort of exclude the green transformation, because the green transformation is pretty capital intensive industry, so you everyone really fully understands the impact from interest rates right there, right? Because it's if you have a large part of your financing coming from debt and the cost of debt is rising, then your overall cost of capital goes up. That's pretty logical. But how does it work on the overall technologies versus the S&P 500? So the overall S&P 500 is a trading at a much more normal valuation metric compared to the technology sector. So the implied risk premium and the balance between equity and debt finances is very much balanced. So the interest rate component is not a very big marginal driver for the S&P 500. But if you go to more speculative equities, so the ones you have in the bubble stock segment, then you're having stocks that are trading at a very, very, very low free cash flow yield. So the implied equity risk premium is very low, and they rarely use any debt financing. So the overall cost of capital is mainly on the pillar of on the equity side. But when you have very low implied equity risk premium, then your interest rate component, the risk-free rate, that becomes pretty big for that overall cost of capital. And that's why this segment, just purely based on the logic of math, I mean, it's just they just respond much more aggressively to interest rate hikes. So I think we've been banging on this for 3 months about the interest rate sensitivity, or maybe even more than 3 months, and we finally, you know, got that confirmation that we had been waiting for, and I'm actually quite pleased to see that. But then it takes us to the next question, John, and that, you know, I know you have comments on dollar yen, and you know, I mentioned before we went on the went live here on the podcast. I mean, it feels like maybe we have gone too far, maybe in the interest rates on the 10 years, and maybe we have to pause a little bit here or reverse. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, and my thoughts are that I want to get to Ole next, actually, because we've all suddenly become interest rates trade. I'll loop back to that, Dalian, because it's a key point, and it requires a bit of a longer spiel to address that question. But Ola, as I was saying, there's really interesting developments in commodities markets yesterday. And on the gold side, Stain pinned that piece, and he mentioned gold as a key indicator for the next step for central bank intervention. And of course, with Powell not throwing out what the market wanted and the market throwing a tantrum, gold was actually lower. And I guess that's going to continue to be the case, or at least it's going to be under pressure. And certainly the spectacularly under pressure against other currencies, if you look at gold versus Aussie, et cetera, until we get that central bank put coming back into place. And then the oil market exploding yesterday as equities are down. Take us through all the ins and outs there.
Yeah, boy, it was a very busy day. Generally, the market, the commodity markets, has been hit by some profit taking this past week, as this yield focus has also spread to the commodity market, and with that also some risk of deleveraging due to high positions being carried in other markets. So the negative impact was most certainly has been focusing on gold, as you mentioned. We broke below 1700 yesterday. We're now into that danger zone, which I highlight on slide 8, the area between 1690 and 1670, really an area that needs to hold for now. And what can change the outlook? And that's clearly what you said there, that we need to see a change in sentiment, especially in the bond market. We need to see yield stabilize. We also need to see the dollar stabilize, and that has been racing higher recently, especially against the yen. So we need to see that start to stabilize. So based on the importance of that area support, then it could be interesting to obviously if we have seen the bond market run a little bit too hot on the downside, then that could coincide with that area of support. So that remains to be seen into next week. But also something like copper, which has been the darling of the metals for a number of months here. That correction that started with the bond tantrum a couple of weeks ago extended yesterday, but it's quite a technical driven sell off. As you can see on slide 8, you can see where we the previous two levels where we found support, and yesterday we dropped all the way to 384, which was another key Fibonacci level before returning back above $4 on high grade. So technical trading market, but obviously one that is worried about the rising yields at this stage. But the big show, I think, was in the oil market, as you mentioned. A 5% rally in crude oil, OPEC Plus, against market expectation, decided to roll over their current the cuts, i.e. we did not see a 500,000 barrel increase from the group as a whole, as expected. And Saudi Arabia decided to extend its 1 million barrel unilateral cut that it implemented for February and March. They'll basically extend that until further notice. So Brent rallied. We reached the highest level since January last year. What is the point here? Well, because obviously you could argue that this is only benefiting producers and speculators who are already long the market, while global consumers will take a hit, and the inflation pressures will go up. That is that could be obviously the impact of this, because this is not a demand driven rally; it's a supply driven rally. I supply is being kept away from the market. The gamble is basically that U.S. crude oil producers, they are much more focusing on dividends, paying dividends, and cutting their costs, and basically resulting in in a situation where production is not going to recover as strongly as we've seen in previous times when crude oil prices came to these levels. So that's really the focus, I think, over the coming months, whether we are seeing a surprise rebound or stronger than expected rebound in US crude oil production, because then potentially they could be left with egg on their faces. But for now, they are in control, and Saudi Arabia would love to see $80, and potentially we could get that in during the second half.
Yeah, and we had an internal brief discussion on that very matter, and whether there's a linkage between Saudi's decision here and the criticism from the Biden administration on the Khashoggi assassination. I suspect there's a little bit of something there, and as well as we discussed, whether there's the financing there to get that U.S. Shale oil producing again, as you mentioned. That's going to be a key question with all these priorities towards green transformation, and then how shabbily, how poorly financing was treated for shale oil the last time around. So it's a very interesting development there, and adds a headwind really to the recovery eventually. I mean, crude oil prices are, you know, galloping higher is something that will is going to push back against a real growth potential as well. Yeah, go ahead.
Just before the meeting, one of the biggest vocal protests against the rising prices actually came from India, which together with China are two of the countries where having seen the biggest growth in demand in recent years, and price in India has reached levels where they are starting to protest, because obviously they utilized the price drop in recent years to raise taxes. So obviously now that the price price of the underlying is going up, the cost to the consumer is being felt harder than it was in the past. So India is clearly not pleased with this decision.
All right. Now, I wanted to loop back to Peter's question on interest rates, and there's two parts to this, and dollar yen, and it's just please look at a dollar yen chart. It's really remarkable what's going on there. Yesterday, I pulled out a dollar Swiss, but dollar yen galloping well above 108. You know, is this a move that's a sign of a dramatic new trend? I think that's only the case if, as Peter asked me about treasury yields, if these treasury yields can gallop higher in a new trend as well. And I think one thing, if I go back to, for example, and this is a very different set of circumstances, but 1987, when you had treasury yields galloping higher all year in a raging bull market, it finally spooked the market. And when you saw the unwind and the actual crash on the Black Monday there, treasury prices went vertical. So my suspicion is that we get maybe some sort of reversal wherever this tops out in terms of dollar yen, in terms of treasury yields. Tops out at some level and then reverses quite spectacularly as well. And what would cause that spectacular reversal? Well, the only thing that I can think of that might definitely cause that would be a very ugly unwind in the equity market. It's not something I would like to call, but it is something that's a risk here. And I think one of the things, the second part of this, that drives, you know, heightened risk, or anytime you have heightened volatility and economy is very leveraged and market participants are very leveraged, as we know they have been in this cycle, is the positive correlation between bonds and stocks in recent days. It's very scary for a lot of, you know, the ways a lot of portfolios are constructed, with assumptions that there's some offsetting risk from the bond side to the equity side when you have an equity sell-off. And when all that's working, then your VAR, your value at risk models go amok. Your assumptions about how your whole portfolio is supposed to work, disintegrate and go amok, and you need to just simply deleverage. And I don't want to get too fright night here, too pessimistic, but that's one thing I see the risk of playing out here. I have a hard time believing dollar yen is just going to go straight vertical here, as U.S. real rates just head for the skies eventually. In any case, whether it's much further down the road, most likely the Fed will have to do something about this. For now, we have to monitor financial conditions, and that's what Powell referred to, that it's not just that long treasury yields are only one indicator, and he's going to look at broad financial conditions, and those are not flashing any warning signs, despite what we say. The S&P has corrected 6%. Even in September, it corrected 10.5%. So it's going to require a lot more, I think, for the Fed to step in. And the next natural cycle focus, before I just end up here, that next natural cycle focus is that March 17th, so week after next FOMC meeting. Peter?
I just you're talking about the financial conditions, and as we talked about on an internal call, Steen said that a lot of people are looking at the Goldman Sachs financial condition index in the US, and if you take up a very long-term chart of that, we basically trading slightly off the lows, so low meaning very easy or loose financial conditions, and we have the most loose financial conditions in the US since the time series starting in 1982. So just for that perspective, I mean, regardless of what have happened in the past 2 or 3 weeks, I mean, it's as you say, I mean, the Fed looks at more things, and there is nothing really to be worried about for now. At least there's a lot of technicalities going on around the world, but and in various markets, but nothing, I think, from a Fed perspective, they're very
right. And maybe the market just has to deal with its own situation rather than the Fed does it. If you know what I mean?
Yeah, correct.
The market's own volatility has to climax and sort itself out without the Fed having to be here. I think perhaps the Fed has glanced a bit nervously over, and this is pure speculation. Has glanced a bit nervously over at some of the equity space froth, the Bitcoin situation and crypto situation, and said, you know, part of this, even though they never want to admit it public, part of this is our fault. We need to allow some of this stuff to sort itself out, and simply keep our eye on the ball, which is broader financial conditions and whether we're supporting real activity on Main Street or not. Yeah, that was a bit perhaps a bit too long of a spiel, but I think it's a key day to sort through all of this stuff. And then just finally a note on FX, I mean, 120 is breaking down quite properly in Eurodollar, and we're even trading below those nominal lows from early February, 119.50. And as long as we're in a higher rates environment, especially risk off with that, it favors the dollar over the euro. I think the EU's in a heap of trouble politically over the vaccine rollout and slow growth risks as well. So it looks like we're going to be returning to maybe the 116, even 115 to 119 range there. You know, I know it's when markets are all up in the air and moving altogether. It's the broad brush stuff we want to cover. But you've drilled down a little bit, Peter, on a couple of interesting single stock stories, or at least one single stock story that has been ripe for discussion. And that's Square and what they're up to with buying a streaming service, a bit of an odd move.
Yeah, it's not that a lot of individual things are happening in equities. It's a very broad based, and I will be writing about interest rate sensitivity technology stocks today. But if we zoom in on some of the single stories, as you say, I think really in sign of the times, I think you have Square, which is also have its CEO as being Jack Dorsey, also the CEO of Twitter. He runs those two companies at the same time. And they have acquired a majority stake in Tidal. From the people that don't know what Tidal is, it's a music streaming service from JC, the famous musician in the US. And as I tweeted yesterday, I was asking people, can anyone explain to me the logic about this? And I didn't get any serious replies back. I mean, there is zero logic in why a fast growing digital payment service company would acquire a music streaming platform. It makes zero sense. And then JC is also entering the board of Square. Square has been on the wrong footing recently with the disappointing outlook and numbers lately in their earnings release. It's also a top three or top four holding in the ARK Invest fund. So very much also part of that big drama right there. And I don't think investors will take this deal as anything is positive for Square at all. And then finally, I don't get why, when you have a company like Square that is so highly valued or have such an aggressive equity valuation, why do you make a mixed cash and stock deal? Just use your stock. I mean, whatever currency is the most richly valued, you use that. But that's my 2 cents on that.
All right. You had a bit more than 2 cents to say yesterday, Ola, or you didn't say yesterday, you said it the day before, I believe. You did a nice long appearance on Macro Voices, one of the more popular big picture podcasts out there, on macrovoices.com. What did you talk about with Eric Townsend and company?
Well, it was a broad run through of what's going on in the commodity markets. Just looking at some of the reasons behind the pickup we've seen in demand over the past 6 months, and obviously trying to look a little bit at the crystal ball going into the future. So on slide 11, just highlighting some of the key discussion subjects topics on the podcast. And as John mentioned, you can access that by going to macrovices.com.
Okie doke. All right, let's just get back to business with the macro calendar and.
Oh, John. Yeah, sorry, you're missing my slide 10 here. Sorry. So this is just to be clear, no endorsement of this ETF. I just find it interesting, and we might have this on our own daily monitoring of the market. So Van Eck Vectors is one of the big, you know, I would say alternative ETF providers. They don't try to compete with iShares and Vanguard, etc., on the main ETF space. So they do some more alternative things. And one of them, one of the things they have done is they have launched yesterday this new ETF called BUZZ, BUZZ. It's already available on the Saxo trading platform. And first day volume, despite it was a down day, was off the chart, as Eric Balcunas said on Bloomberg, which is their ETF expert. I mean, normally you see the only volume in an ETF launch if it's it's an ETF on gold or some major indice, but this one was just off the chart. And what it is, it tracks an underlying algorithm that scans the entire online forums and chatter on Twitter, etc., trying to gauge what retail investors are talking about and interested in. And they have strict filters to avoid having GameStop and the meme stocks, as they are called, in the portfolio. I've put in here on slide 10 a small insert where you can see the top holdings in that. But I think this ETF is, as I said, this is not an endorsement. It's been endorsed by Portnoy, I think he's called, the guy that became very famous during the rally back last year, Barstool.
Portnoy.
Yeah, he's famous for sport betting, and then turned into a day trader when sports events were closed. And he's been a pretty big figure, at least for the young and new retail crowd coming into the market. So as I said, this is not endorsement. It's just, I think it's interesting to watch something like this as getting you an idea of where the market is in terms of sentiment. So you can add that to your watch list. I think it's actually worthwhile.
Cool stuff. Let's have a look at that, and let's have a look at the macro calendar for today. It's really about the U.S. Jobs report and how much the market wants to get out of that, if anything, amid all the other distractions. I doubt if much, but do note that the ADP employment change was pretty weak at plus 117 earlier in the week. Not impressive jobs growth. Of course, we're going to expect that picks up, perhaps starting as early as this month, but especially next month and beyond, as the lockdowns cease and we get some of these lower income service jobs back into gear in the U.S. But again, I think we've gone through the menu of difficulties for this market here: positive stock bond correlation, risk off that can actually cause a further risk off from expanding volatility, etc. So stay on your toes, be careful out there. And have a great weekend. And we'll be back with the next Saxo Market Call next week. For today, thanks for joining.